Welcome back for another episode of Clean Tech Talk, where we at Clean Technica interview clean tech leaders from around the world. With topics ranging from electric cars to climate change communication, you can listen to our full podcast series by visiting our website at cleantechnica.com.
Do you want to drive a new Tesla or a Rivian truck or a Lucid Air with 500-mile battery? A new online raffle lets you win an EV dream car while helping the planet. Visit evraffle.org to win. CCAN Action Fund uses all proceeds to promote clean energy. Visit evraffle.org.
We are here for another episode of Clean Tech Talk. I'm Zach Shahan, CEO of Clean Technica. And joining us today is probably my favorite guest over the years. We've had him on many times, Mark Z. Jacobson from Stanford University, professor of civil and environmental engineering at Stanford University, and has done many other things. Normally, we talk solutions a lot. You know, we've focused on 100% renewable energy. Your research and your sometimes organizations focused on that, sort of pushing the solutions. But today, I think the first time that we're really just sort of focusing on a naughty topic, a not solution, but it's been in the news lately, and I saw you tweeting about it, or maybe Xing about it. I don't know what we're supposed to call that now, but direct air capture. So, first of all, let's get a little bit more background. What you've done over the years, just set the stage for anyone who is not familiar with your work, and then we'll get into that topic.
Yeah, thanks, Zach, for having me on again. So I work on air pollution, global warming, and clean renewable energy solutions to those problems. So I developed computer models to study atmospheric pollution, global climate, and also clean renewable energy. And yeah, with regard to direct air capture, this is a big issue because the federal government in the U.S. just put in a lot of money, I think about $1.2 billion. Into funding some projects, and some of the funding went straight to these oil companies to implement direct air capture. And what is direct air capture, you might ask? Well, direct air capture is trying to remove carbon dioxide molecules directly from the air. It's not even what's called carbon capture, which is taking the carbon dioxide out of the smokestacks of like coal plants or gas plants or bioenergy plants. Which also has problems, but it's actually trying to remove it directly from the air. And the air is very dilute in terms of carbon dioxide. It's about 420 parts per million. So of every 1 million molecules of total air, which is mostly oxygen and nitrogen, or nitrogen, then oxygen, you have 420 molecules of CO2. So it's very dilute, takes a lot of energy then as a result to extract that CO2 from the air. And it also takes a lot of energy to compress it. You need to then build pipelines to pipe the CO2 somewhere. Most of it's used, 75% worldwide of all CO2 that is captured today is used for what's called enhanced oil recovery, which is to make oil less dense. Pump the CO2 is pumped in an oil well, oil is made less dense, so more of it can come to the surface faster. But that process itself, it causes about 40% of the CO2 that is captured to go right back to the air. Anyway, which is the next question.
You just like rolled through several of the key points, sort of like the abstract, what we'll say of this podcast, I think. But yeah, so the big news item is that U.S. government funding for direct air capture. We'll get into the issue of, you just summarized it all, but we'll get into the issue more. We'll talk about that more and where it's coming from. But do you know why the U.S. government is funding this? Do you have any intel on sort of, you know, how this came about or even suspicions if you want?
Well, I mean, I think the federal government, and through the Inflation Reduction Act, about 60% of the funding for that is actually for useful purposes like wind, solar, geothermal, battery electric vehicles, energy efficiency, electric induction cooktops to replace gas cooktops, heat pumps, electric heat pumps to replace air and water gas heaters, and electric vehicles, so things like that, which are useful for a clean renewable energy future. But about 40% of the Inflation Reduction Act funding is going to things I think are not useful at all. In fact, some are cause more problems than they solve, including direct air capture, carbon capture, bioenergy, small modular nuclear reactors, electrofuels, blue hydrogen. And several of these, like at least four of them, blue hydrogen, electrofuels, direct air capture, and carbon capture, are all constructs of the fossil fuel industry. These all benefit the fossil fuel industry. And so they push them. And how do they benefit them? Well, they give them a cover to not do anything, not reduce fossil fuels. I mean, if you can take CO2 out of the air, then you can claim that, oh, you're doing something about your emissions, and you can keep, you allow your emissions to continue from your fossil fuel plants or any type of combustion plants. Same thing with carbon capture, which is taking CO2 out of the exhaust stream of a combustion source. You can claim, well, we're doing this, we're working on this CO2 technology to remove it from the air, from the exhaust stream, so we don't need to stop the emissions from the power plant. Same thing with blue hydrogen, which is basically, well, 96% of hydrogen today is produced from natural gas, which in that process produces a lot of CO2 and methane and pollution.
And which we and I think others have started calling more fossil gas or methane gas, just because natural gas has a nice sound to it. I don't know. It's just a simple communication issue and labeling issue, but I know it's a bit of a trend, and we've been on that trend. So just to
keep that in. Yeah, well, that it is fossil gas, you're right. And that fossil gas, so blue hydrogen is adding carbon capture equipment to this hydrogen production, which doesn't reduce any of the methane or CO2 or air pollution emissions from the mining or the transport of the gas. And that is a lot, by the way. It also doesn't reduce all of the CO2. Well, first of all, you need two sets of capture equipment to do this with blue hydrogen. One for the, because you need you need natural gas for energy for the producing the hydrogen. So you need carbon capture for that process. And also methane itself is used as the feedstock to produce hydrogen. And so you need carbon capture for that. So you need two sets of carbon capture equipment. You need two sets of pipes, because you have to pipe natural gas to the place, the facility. Then you need to pipe CO2 somewhere else. So then you have to like invade people's land to build pipes over their land to send the CO2 somewhere. And who knows what happens to it? 75% goes to this enhanced oil recovery, as I mentioned. But the whole process is a boondoggle, because it's so much simpler just to use solar electricity to run it through an electrolyzer to produce hydrogen directly. You don't need any carbon capture whatsoever, no natural gas pipes, no CO2 pipes, there's zero CO2 emissions. And it's just so much simpler, cleaner, no air pollution, no mining, no fossil infrastructure. Well, okay, so the Inflation Reduction Act, while I was mentioning carbon capture, direct air capture, blue hydrogen, electrofuels. So what are electrofuels there? When you take CO2 that's captured and then you use them, combine them with other chemicals and use a lot of other energy to then produce another liquid fuel to then burn in a combustion vehicle, so to replace gasoline or diesel or something like that. And that process is just as bad, because you're still producing, you're still burning fuels and producing pollution. And anyway, the fossil fuel industry is really pushing all these, as many different, these fake technologies as possible in order to stay relevant and stay alive. And so they do infiltrate into, they do lobby the federal government, and they do voice their opinions very strongly. And they have a very strong lobby group. And they do, you know, make very rosy claims about what their technologies can do. And then inside of the Department of Energy, there are people who are fossil favorite people. And I mean, there's even one from my university who's working in the Department of Energy who comes from the, we had a department at Stanford called the Petroleum Engineering Department, and they conveniently changed their name to Energy Resources Engineering, but still do a lot of petroleum engineering. And they're funded, there's a lot of funding from the natural gas. It used to be there's this whole funding organism called the Natural Gas Initiative at Stanford, in fact. And out of that, you get people percolating into the Department of Energy.
And well, there used to be much more of a push for as well, for natural gas as a bridge fuel and all this. You don't hear that talk as much anymore, but it's still you know, there's still a lot of effects or after effects or ramifications from that kind of that long-term push. And I'll come back in a moment to just the long-term push from the fossil fuel energy to do this kind of thing. But just focusing on the Inflation Reduction Act, I hadn't really seen that discussed, that, you know, like 40% of it is this kind of thing. And of course, you know, you're the expert. I'm not surprised that I'm learning something from you today, because I always learn something from you. But I think it was a very big, it was a huge political bill. It was in many cases the biggest climate legislation ever passed in the U.S. A lot of great stuff in it, but we all knew. I mean, I think most of us didn't expect it to ever happen because it was being held up by Joe Manchin and some others that were like, you know, tough. You were like, how are you ever going to find a solution with these people? Do you think? I mean, do you think this was all just like, I don't know how to phrase it actually. Like, do you think that he and his sort of colleagues in the fossil fuel friendly industries and others worked really hard to get this, like they were happy to pass the overall legislation as long as they were pushing this forward
in there that allowed some of these technologies or increased the funding for them, and so that's why it became so much money. Yeah, so certainly there's, well, I want to point out there's this whole theory.
I wasn't phrasing my thing. So I just want to, my question, not just do you think they, of course they snuck it in to get it passed, but do you think that they really want this so much that they were like happy to get this legislation passed to get this kind of long-term funding and delay? Was this a big thing they wanted, do you think?
I can't really speak for any individual, but I, just from my understanding, there was a compromise that really made the fossil fuel industry people happy to some degree, because there was a lot of funding going to carbon capture, direct air capture, blue hydrogen, electrofuels, and so there is funding in there for the fossil fuel industry. So that made them, placated them. And made it more amenable for people like Manchin to pass it. That's just my theory.
They have financial risks and financial challenges coming up as we transition. Is this a big help for them, basically? Is this something that's going to really help?
I think it's a really good in terms of covering up what's really going on. And so it really does help from the optical point of view, and to try to they can now say, oh, we're doing something, you know, stay off our backs. And that's what they're doing. I mean, they basically say, we're investing in this, we're pushing this. And so that, so they're going to keep doing this. But it's all part of what's called, I call all of the above policy. I mean, this policy has been around. It was in the Obama administration where let's try everything and hope something works. And there are people, who are legitimate, non-fossil people who also support carbon capture and direct air capture, because, I mean, this is the main problem that I want to talk about today, is that, I mean, this thing just does not work. And yet some people believe it has some potential. But it just frighteningly makes things worse. It emits more CO2, causes more CO2 to go up in the air, direct air capture does, than if you don't do direct air capture.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about that more. But was there anything left on the political side? I mean, of course, politics is messy. And I mean, you knew it's not going to be a perfect bill. It's just interesting how much of it got put in. And yeah, is there anything more to say on the fossil industry side, or we'll switch to the actual?
Well, I mean, I think we see this not only in the Inflation Reduction Act, but we see that in states and municipalities where you see the fossil fuel industry trying to push different forms of carbon capture, direct air capture, blue hydrogen in particular. Like in New Mexico, there was an effort by the gas industry to push hydrogen into homes and as a way of mixing some hydrogen with natural gas. So kind of mix it, this is another one, mixing hydrogen and gas in pipelines to take them into homes. So you're going to be burning hydrogen and gas instead of just gas.
And you get the same kind of push in the UK and parts of Europe, right? This is the same.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going a lot in Europe. And in fact, and then there's another one that's like in the upper Midwest in five states, including Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota. You have 34 ethanol facilities, and there's proposals, a few proposals. One particular one is to link 34 different ethanol facilities together through a 2,000-mile pipeline. And then they'd connect the CO2 from the fermentation process of the ethanol through the pipelines and then pipe it to North Dakota and dump it underground. Now, first of all, aside from the fact that the pipelines don't exist and you have to then invade people's land to build them. And in fact, in two states, I think North and South Dakota, they got permission from judges just to walk onto people's property and take surveys without even their permission. And I mean, you imagine now having to build this, all these pipelines. And for what? For ethanol, which is a completely inefficient fuel that, and you can.
This is so 1990.
Well, yeah. And I did the study that, you know, you can, and they want to spend this huge amount of money, billions of dollars on this. And it turns out if you spend the same amount of money to build wind turbines just to provide electricity for electric vehicles, get rid of the ethanol factories, no pipelines, no pollution from the ethanol, which itself is it causes a lot of pollution and CO2. That ethanol, whole ethanol factory causes pollution in addition to the CO2. And there's a lot of other CO2 sources aside from the fermentation process that they're capturing from. But anyway, people could spend the same amount of money on, if you buy wind turbines for electric vehicles and you use that in a Ford F-150, for example. Ford F-150, they have a flex fuel version, which runs on ethanol, and an electric version. So you can compare them exactly. The people would save, individuals who use the F-150 would save about $45,000 over a 30-year period, if you buy two generations of these. Over a 30-year period, save $45,000 in fuel. And even if the cost of the car is $10,000, $15,000 more, which it's not, well, it's about $10,000, but then there's tax credits. You just save tens of thousands of dollars. You eliminate 100% of CO2. You eliminate 100% of air pollution from the ethanol process. And you eliminate all the need for pipelines. And you eliminate the 34 ethanol factories and all the process of producing that ethanol. Point is that there are many better alternatives that are more cost effective, cleaner, that actually help solve the problems than trying to capture CO2.
Yeah. And who did that study?
I did the study.
Oh, okay. Of course you did. But I thought you mentioned someone else. Cool. So we'll have to look and get that one because I don't recall seeing that. But that's just another element. Yeah. But there was one more thing. So the fossil fuel industry has been pushing this stuff for as long as I remember. I mean, how long back have they been pushing direct air capture and carbon capture and storage, you know, separately? They're different.
Well, yeah, carbon capture is a bit older. I mean, this has been going on since 1990s, mm-hmm. early 2000s, started picking up in the early 2000s.
That's what I thought. And how much has it changed since then?
Not a whole lot. I mean, you can see these studies, they make a lot of assumptions, except they do have some facilities up, but they're mostly for enhanced, there in the United States, there was one coal-fired power plant that was built. Well, there's an existing coal-fired power plant, and they added carbon capture equipment to it. And that was in Texas. And they spent $1 billion for the carbon capture equipment. But just to show you how inefficient this whole system is, and this was supposed to be the cutting-edge plant. It became active in 2016. And it takes so much energy that they built a natural or fossil gas plant just to provide the electricity to run the carbon capture equipment on the coal plant. And so then they built natural gas pipelines or fossil gas pipelines and had to drill for more natural gas or fossil gas. And the carbon efficiency capture efficiency was only about 65% average over 3 years. It wasn't 90% like they claimed. They used the carbon that was captured for enhanced oil recovery, where they lost 40% of the CO2 right back to the air. Because they built the natural gas plant, they didn't reduce any air pollution from the coal plant with the carbon capture equipment. but they had natural gas now, and they have more air pollution. So they increased air pollution. They increased fossil infrastructure. They increased fossil mining because of this fossil gas they got out. And the CO2 reduction was trivial because even though they did take some CO2 out of the exhaust of the coal plant, they had all the CO2 that was uncaptured from the natural gas plant and from the natural gas mining and from the coal mining. And so when you account for that, even before looking at what happened during enhanced oil recovery, only 11 to 20% of the CO2 that total CO2 that was emitted in the system was captured. But then 40% of that was lost due to the enhanced oil recovery. So we're talking about 6 to 11% capture rate. And then it was so inefficient and costly and a boondoggle, it shut down after 3 years. They closed down the carbon capture equipment after 3 years. But who paid that $1 billion? Well, gets ratepayers pay it. And who pays the highest fraction of their income for electricity? It's low-income ratepayers.
Yeah, so I mean,
this is how bad this whole system is.
I mean, talk about throwing away money or burning money, almost literally.
Hello, listeners. My name is Scott Cooney, and I am Zach's business partner. I'm the founder of Clean Technica, and I am so, so grateful to all of you avid clean tech fans out there. We are thrilled to have been accelerating the clean tech revolution for more than a decade now, and really that all starts with you. The decisions you make and your companies make are driving this revolution. I'm most happy to be able to say that if we at Clean Technica had a nickel for every time we heard someone say that they purchased their first solar, their first EV, their first e-bike, or some other clean technology because of something they read on our website, Clean Technica would have enough money to be a cable TV channel by now. But the thing is, we don't get those nickels, and as a result, our ability to move markets only goes so far. So I have a favor to ask. If you love what we do, and you feel that we're helping move the world to a better future, could you chip in a monthly contribution of $5, $10, or whatever you can? If even 1% of our audience chipped in $5 a month, we could really blow this thing up and move markets. So if you feel motivated and can spare the cost of one cup of coffee a month, please go to cleantechnica.com/support and sign up through either PayPal or Patreon. Again, that's cleantechnica.com/support. Thanks so much.
So, yeah, I mean, I remember covering some pilot project or R&D discussion in the UAE, like, I don't know, seven, maybe more than 7 years ago. It was a while back. And we had covered it a handful of times, you know, before that too. And it's always pilot projects and, you know, funding to develop it, to make it more efficient, to make it work better. And I haven't really seen anything about it improving or getting close. I mean, we're so far from it being useful that it's not even maybe worth discussing. But I mean, just in general, are like any signs of improvement with it, or is it just constantly let's put $1 billion here into this and we're improving it, we're making it more efficient, we're making it work better. Is there any is there any sign of actual progress on the technology itself?
Well, there's this group, AIFA, that analyzed different carbon capture projects, and they found that, I mean, there's never been a capture project with a capture rate higher than 80%. That's just something very concentrated. And half of them are below 57% capture rates. And we're down to the largest carbon capture project in the world is the Gorgon project in Australia. And although the capture rate they calculate is around 20 or 30%, when you actually account for, there's a bunch of other stuff that's not accounted for, it's actually negative. They're actually probably increasing the CO2 into the air
case that you just sort of discussed. So we're mixing carbon capture and storage and direct air capture. So getting back to that funding for direct air capture, you said it was 2.1 billion or 1.2 billion? What was the...
I think that initial... Well, there's an initial allocation for 1.2 billion for these two plants. I think they're in Louisiana and Texas.
And
I think there's more money coming for that. So maybe 5 billion total.
And this money is supposed to be... Like it's supposed to be useful for what? What is it supposed to be achieving?
Well, they're building plants that are, well, they're supposed to be test plants for direct air capture. But keep in mind, like carbon capture, you're dealing with CO2 that's from a concentrated stream, relatively concentrated stream. So like an exhaust stream.
Whereas, and we already can't do that well.
Yeah, we already know that the efficiency of that is ridiculously small. Now they want to take CO2 directly from the air when it's even more dilute. And as a result, it actually takes more electricity per kilogram or ton of CO2 that you capture to capture the CO2. Then on top of that, you still have to compress it to push it through a pipeline. So
just get technical. I'll let you get 100% technical now again. You talked about it at the beginning, but you know, for most of us, we need to hear this a couple of times to understand what you're saying. So explain again why technically this is just a total, like, this is a total.
Well, okay. The simple version is, and this applies to both carbon capture and direct air capture, they both require electricity to run. Okay, you can't get away. Well, we're talking about synthetic. Okay, there is what I call natural carbon capture, namely trees, that you don't require electricity to, right? You don't require electricity to extract the carbon dioxide.
Got palm tree pictures behind me, but I have a suspicion they're not the best at capturing. I don't know. They don't have a lot of foliage on them.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So photosynthesis is efficient at capturing carbon, and that's how we have vegetation. And that doesn't require energy. It doesn't require equipment. And there is I'm not referring to that when I'm talking about direct air capture. I mean, that is natural direct air capture. But synthetic direct air capture is what I'm referring to. And so it also requires electricity. So you know, most electricity is produced by fossil fuels. But let's just say we're going to use renewables. That's the best case. Because if you're using fossil fuels to produce that electricity to try to take CO2 out of the air, you have a lot of CO2 that's already being emitted by the fossil fuels that you have to subtract. But even in this plant, in this new funding for the Texas and Louisiana plants, they're claiming they're going to use solar electricity. So let's take that. That's the best case, using renewable electricity. So the question is, right now we have to transition the world to 100% renewable electricity and heat for everything as fast as possible. Ideally by 80% by 2030, 100% by 2050. We're only a few percent of the way in. And, there's not only the electric power sector, but we have to transition buildings, industry, transportation. So when we account for that, we have a long way to go. So we need every bit of electricity we can, renewable electricity we can, to replace a fossil fuel source. So every bit of renewable electricity that's produced today, if it's used to replace a fossil fuel source, that's good. But if you're using it instead to run a direct air capture or carbon capture, you're preventing that renewable electricity from replacing a fossil fuel source. So let's compare the two. So that's what you're comparing with. There's no way around it. I mean, if you're taking, let's say 10 gigawatts of solar electricity and you're using it for direct air capture, you're not using it to replace a coal plant or a gas plant.
Yeah. It's a bit of a side topic, but we covered cryptocurrency for a bit, crypto mining.
Yeah, same thing.
This was the thing that drove me nuts, is people didn't get the idea that you can't just say, oh, we'll do it with renewables, which they weren't anyway. But you can't just say that because you try to explain. You need to grow renewable capacity for the existing electricity uses. You can't jack up demand a ton and say we'll cover it with renewables when you need that new renewable generation capacity to replace fossil fuel power plants, to power electric vehicles, et cetera. It's a simple concept, I think, but it was something that was very hard to get across. And it sounds like this is the same kind of deal, which is, you can't be.
Yeah, it's exactly the same thing, because it's not only to replace existing fossils, but there's also new growth of energy demand because higher populations and people use more energy. Of course, that's another issue, but still we have to, if every bit of renewable electricity that we prevent from replacing fossils is going to cost not only CO2, but air pollution, mining, fossil infrastructure. So in other words, if you're using renewable electricity to run carbon direct air capture rather than to replace a coal or gas plant, you're preventing that coal or gas plant or to that replacement of coal or gas plant to eliminate not only all the mining of the coal or gas, but also the infrastructure, so pipelines, coal trains, coal, you know, coal mining infrastructure, coal plants, gas plants. And you're preventing the elimination of the air pollution from the coal and the gas. And you're also, by the carbon, direct air capture, by the way, so the direct air capture does not reduce any air pollution, does not reduce any fossil mining, it does not reduce any fossil infrastructure. Also, that same amount of electricity that you're using to capture the carbon with the direct air capture, you would eliminate more CO2 if you eliminate the coal mining and combustion, or the natural gas mining plus combustion. So you're, as a result, you are increasing CO2, because you could reduce more CO2 just by using that same amount of electricity to replace a fossil plant than to run direct air capture. So you're increasing CO2, you're increasing mining of fuel, you're increasing air pollution and air pollution death and morbidity, and you're increasing fossil infrastructure.
It's not even close.
It's not even close. Well, yeah, if you add up, and then if you look at the social cost benefit of using renewable electricity to replace, let's say, a coal plant versus to run direct air capture, we're talking a factor of 6 to 7 higher social cost benefit. So what is social cost? Social cost is the energy cost plus the health cost plus the climate cost. So 6 to 7 times greater social cost benefit of using renewable electricity to replace a coal plant versus to run direct air capture. And this will go on until we eliminate all fossil sources of energy, not only electricity, but any source of combustion or any source of CO2. So long as we have source of combustion or any source of CO2 that can be replaced or fixed with renewable electricity, direct air capture is useless. It has no benefit whatsoever. And then that's not even counting for then what happens to that CO2 afterwards. As I mentioned, 75% of the CO2 that is captured goes to enhanced oil recovery throughout the world today. Most of the rest will go to these electrofuels. Some goes to soda water. But nobody has incentive to put the CO2 under the ground. There's no financial incentive. Imagine you have, here's, look at this economic model. You have direct air capture. You buy equipment and use energy for direct air capture. There's no income from that. There's no income to take CO2 out of the air. You put it into the ground, there's no income from that. So the only way this is even tenable from a financial point of view is if you're getting subsidized, which is going on right now. This is all a subsidy. So, or they take that CO2 and don't put it in the ground and they use it, somebody pays them for the CO2. And that's why most of the CO2 today is used for enhanced oil recovery, because they're getting paid for that CO2. But that's even causing more damage. So there's no financial viable model for this. I mean, I don't even think the DOE thinks about these things. Like, what is the future? What is the future scenario? How is this going to work financially if they're putting the CO2 under the ground? Who's going to then, how is this going to sustain itself?
Yeah.
In addition, they certainly didn't look at the comparison of using the electricity for direct air capture versus just replacing fossils. I don't know, you know, what they're thinking, except it's not a thought process. It's really a lobbying process in my mind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just to close on that direct air capture, it sounds like it's like a stack of pancakes of problems. Like, it's not even just like one comparison that's a problem or one calculation. It's, or one technological issue. It's just like one after another that you're stacking on top of each other, that it's just a horrible, horrible idea. Well,
yeah, and I'll point out one more thing. It's like, okay, so back to this financial model. I mean, so if they do it, if these oil companies or gas fossil companies do this direct air capture, the way they will pay for it, that'll just mean energy prices are going to be higher. So they're just going to pass that cost on to ratepayers. And again, who will pay that? Who pays the highest fraction of their income for electricity or energy? It's low income individuals. So this will is just a tax. It's just a tax on low-income people.
Yeah, it's depressing. But there's two kind of groups of people, I guess we could say, that, yeah, I'd like to sort of discuss now. So one is, there's definitely a lot of very, you know, very climate-concerned people, you know, people who are basically near panic mode or in panic mode with what's happening with the climate. And there's definitely some of them who just, they know how bad the situation is getting, how we're not doing what we need to do, and just jump to the idea that, well, we really need to figure out how to get carbon, like how to do this, how to suck carbon out of the air, how to capture carbon and all of this. And it's like, this is just critical or else we're not going to make it. So this is kind of the mindset behind it. And I know people, you know, responding in that way, you see it a lot. I think it's a pretty large group of the very climate concerned people. What do you say to, like, I guess we just spent the last half hour saying what you say to them. I mean, we said what you say to that people in that space, but I guess, what do you say to the idea that we just have to find a way to do it and we have to put money into it because we have to figure out how to do it? Like,
well, yeah. So the biggest concern I've heard is that, you know, people are worried there's so much excess carbon in the air. Even if we stop all the emissions, we still have to remove a lot. Okay, that's fine. But first of all, stopping the emissions of 1 ton of carbon dioxide is the exact same as taking 1 ton out of the air. So until we stop emissions, if it's easier to stop the emissions itself, or if it's more beneficial, more cost-effective, then that's what we should do. So there's no, I mean, that argument does not fly
with
air capture.
And there is still, of course, the issue of planting trees and that kind of thing, which is...
There are other, I'll get to that in a sec, but you can't rely, that is not an argument for direct air capture, because as I just mentioned, what direct air capture is doing, and the same with carbon capture, is that it is increasing CO2. So you can have that philosophy all you want, but if you have that philosophy and you say we should need direct air capture, well, all you're doing is increasing CO2 by doing this. So this is, just because you want something does not mean it's going to happen by this technology. Technology is not designed to, you're going to increase air pollution, you're going to increase mining. This technology is not designed to reduce air pollution. It's not designed to reduce mining of fossils or fossil infrastructure. And it very inefficiently reduces CO2. So why would you do it if you're going to increase CO2? Because it's an opportunity cost. That's the first thing. Second thing is that CO2, first of all, if we do eliminate 80% of emissions by 2030, when 100% by 2050, as we need to do worldwide, and this is all emissions, CO2 will come down naturally to about 350 parts per million by 2100. Now, it's a big if we can reduce those emissions, but that's the best we can do, is to reduce the emissions. Because CO2 doesn't, even though it has a long lifetime in the air, that lifetime is on the order of 70 to 80 years. Well, when you're increasing CO2, the lifetime of CO2, the E-folding lifetime, is on the order of 50 years. But when you're decreasing CO2, the lifetime extends, gets prolonged to about 80 years or so. And so if we stop emissions by 2100, CO2 should get down to 350 parts per million. Third, CO2 is only about 45% of global warming issue. And, you know, the next is black carbon, is the second leading cause of global warming, which has a very short lifetime of on the order of weeks to months. So that is actually the most effective method of slowing global warming, is stopping black carbon emissions, which come from diesel exhaust, jet fuel exhaust, biomass burning, kerosene burning, any type of high temperature burning. It could be wood or fuel or anything.
Well, two things are very helpful. I think very reassuring kind of points, because there is this kind of, I think, just general assumption that it's once it's up there, it's up there and it's not going away. And yeah, but so I think these are very helpful comments. I mean, all three points, but the first one you spent about 30 minutes already explaining. So, but I think then you put it in a really good nutshell, like a sort of TikTok style version that could be useful for just quick communication. But then two and three are especially useful that I think don't get discussed much and are very helpful.
Yeah, most people don't even know that anything aside from CO2 is affecting the climate. And so, but CO2 it's about 45%. So, you know, we need to, but let's say we get to the point where we eliminate all fossil fuels, then people argue then we should use direct air capture. But even at that point, there's other lower hanging fruit that you want to do an evaluation at that point to see whether other technologies and methods are better. So, for example, if we eliminate all energy emissions, there's still non-energy emissions, including open biomass burning. I mean, that produces lots of CO2 and particles, including black carbon and brown carbon, which cause warming. and methane and all sorts of other gases that in air pollutants. So that's that strategy of actually reducing biomass burning is a very important strategy that's not even talked about. Then, and also increasing reforestation and reforesting and growing trees, you know, to reduce, to increase carbon uptake. And also then methane from agriculture, from landfills, from rice paddies, digestive tracts of sheep and cattle, from manure, nitrous oxide emissions from fertilizers. Halogens are about 9% of all global warming. And those are, you know, trying to rein in more halogen emissions. So all of these are easier to address because some of them are policy directed. Only policy don't require huge amounts of energy or require just bags and a few local pipes like a landfill to trap methane, for example. So the question is, should these things be promoted, you know, in favor instead of using energy and equipment for this direct air capture? But that discussion, you know, we should always be addressing these other sources as well simultaneously as trying to reduce emissions or to replace fossil plants for energy. But, you know, it's really direct air capture should not even be discussed until we've eliminated all the fossil plants.
Excellent. Really good responses. So really helpful. So the other group that I was, you know, thinking of is, yeah, the governmental, the policy people. And I mean, of course, there's some overlap here, but generally speaking, it's that all of the above strategy, which Obama implemented, I mean, basically to get stuff done, I think it was the idea was we have to make compromise to get stuff done in politics. Politics is very annoying business because not like what's best, what's right. It's like, what can we do? What would we have to do to get stuff done? And it's infuriating. It's very, even for those who, you know, spend their careers and lives in politics trying to do good, it's just a very difficult thing because of that. But I think there are people with good intentions who believe just we should do everything we can, and they're not very scientific necessarily. And so it's like, oh, the more the better on types of solutions without sort of understanding, well, no, the more the better on the good solutions and just drop these bad solutions, but or non-solutions. But I don't know. I mean, there are people in the Department of Energy who, you know, I know, I'm sure there's many that you know. How much do you feel like this is just something it's part of what it is? It's just, you're going to have an all of the above strategy as long as Republicans and we can say dirty Democrats or Democrats representing fossil interests have so much influence? Or how much do you think it's people who are just trying to find every solution possible with good intentions and just making the mistake of not understanding the science and the math behind it?
Well, I think in this case, it's certainly there's a mistake about understanding whether direct air capture has any benefit or not. I think that's a mistake not many people know, even though there is information out there in scientific papers. Not a lot of people know about it.
And so it tends to be very scientific people who discuss this. Like, we have Michael Bernard on our team, of course, has written about this many times. And it's very scientific and engineering minded people who discuss this. And I feel like it's a topic that's very hard to get to expand beyond that kind of group, right?
Yeah. So that's part of it. But I don't know if it's willful ignoring science in favor of, like, with the hope though we'll do, even though there's problems now, we'll do better, not really understanding that it's not even designed to do better and you can't do better with this. But I think there's a lot of push at the same time for this all of the above. Let's just try everything. And there's also a push by the fossil fuel industry, so let's appease the fossil fuel industry. So there's really three things going on. There's kind of ignorance of what's actually the science of it, and there's this kind of pushing of all of the above, and there's lobbying for some people favoring the fossil fuel industry.
And it all just combines enough for more than $1 billion of funding for a wasteful, harmful direct air capture project.
Well, that's the start. Yeah, that's just the start of the funding too.
Yeah, how much, I mean, do you know how much more is potential?
I don't remember the numbers, but I thought it was maybe $5 billion.
And do you know
this was
how much potential there is for, like, you know, stopping that, for, like, you know, disrupting that pipeline of money for that, and sort of, you know, and ending those projects before they start, or what?
I don't know. I just
do your best. Do your best, and
I'm sure you could. I'm sure you could. If people get in charge, they can stop the funding. You know, after each year, they can probably cut off the funding at any time. I mean, I know, as long as the funding hasn't actually been sent to them, if it has to be requested every year, then they can stop it each year. But if it's already been sent, then they probably can't stop it.
Well, I think we covered everything that was on my mind for it, and a lot more, because, you know, you always bring a lot to the table. I think, any closing remarks? I mean, I think you've summarized it in a few ways, because I kept asking you to say it again in different ways, but I think it was useful to try to hammer the point home. But are there any final remarks on these topics?
Well, I can just say that we don't need direct air capture. I mean, as I mentioned, their first line of defense should be to transition everything to clean, renewable electricity or energy, and provide that energy and electricity with wind and solar, and go to electrification of vehicles and heat pumps and use battery storage, its efficiency. So that should be where we should put all our effort into. And we don't need this direct air capture. It's just not going to, you know, if we ever get to a point where we've eliminated all combustion sources, okay, then we can have time to fiddle around with this, but we don't have time to fiddle right now.
And I'll take a slight risk here, but maybe preview another, I would like to do another episode with you about green hydrogen, but what's your, like, your top line elevator pitch takeaway on the state of green hydrogen and green hydrogen marketing right now? What's this?
Well, green hydrogen, which is hydrogen produced from clean, renewable electricity through electrolysis, it's useful for certain applications like steel production, green steel production, ammonia production instead of using fossil gas, and certain long-distance transport, like long-distance aircraft or ships, potentially. There's going to be a competition with batteries, of course. And then some grid applications, battery storage will be dominate grid applications, but it could be some combinations of green hydrogen with battery storage. But we don't want hydrogen going into homes for heating homes. We don't need it for passenger vehicles. We don't need to burn it. So they're very limited applications, not everything under the sun, very few applications, and only green hydrogen, not all the other colors.
Yeah, blue hydrogen and gray. And yeah, there's, I don't know, the thing, they create a new one every year. But yeah, well, thank you so much, Mark. This has been a pleasure and really informative. I think this could be very helpful for a lot of people who are in a kind of panic mode about the climate situation, and, or at least, you know, very concerned about it, and helps to explain why we don't want to throw money at this. So thank you for that service and everything you do. Happy I saw your tweet about it by chance. And yeah, keep it up. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Zach. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Clean Tech Talk. Join us next time to get your electric fix. If you would like to sponsor our podcast, send us an email at accounts@cleantechnica.com. That's accounts@cleantechnica.com. Thanks.